Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to today's episode
of Resounding Echoes.
Unlike their European counterparts, American soldiers were spared the horrors of trench warfare until at least 1917. That circumstance may go some way to explaining how the composition of our first piece today was possible in 1915, but it doesn't get us very far. When one is in the presence of such unique and extreme originality, one is left floundering for explanations for the frankly inexplicable. That was the opening of Tone Roads No. 3 by Charles Ives, a piece lasting in that recording less than 3 minutes, which a better musician than I could easily spend 3 hours expounding and expanding upon its manifold marvels and radical rethinking. The similarity of the name of the piece to the concept of what a decade later would become the bedrock of Schoenberg's serial method of composition is no more than sublime serendipity, more so because Ives is doing things in this piece which Schoenberg would likewise do but develop much, much further. I don't know if it is for want of time or inclination or just because his mind was such a fecund font of new and extraordinary ideas that I has rarely, if ever, developed the full potential of any of his most revolutionary notions before he came upon a new road and couldn't resist exploring it. Just one example from Tone Roads No. 3 shall suffice for now. The chimes at the beginning comprise a full 12-note row or road, and furthermore, they almost include all 12 intervals, but not quite. He then almost literally stands this vertical row on its side to make the following horizontal harmony, and on he goes on his merry way. Meanwhile, back in Europe, I knew a man, he was my chum, but he grew blacker every day, and would not brush the flies away, nor blanch however fierce the hum of passing shells. I used to read to rouse him random things from Dun, like Geth with child a mandrake root, but you can tell he was far gone, for he lay gaping, mackerel-eyed, and stiff, and senseless as a post. Even when that old poet cried, I longed to talk with some old lover's ghost. I tried the elegies one day, but he, because he heard me say, What needst thou, have no more covering than a man? Grinned nastily, and so I knew the worms had got his brains at last. There was one thing that I might do to starve the worms. I racked my head for healthy things and quoted Maud. His grin got worse, and I could see he sneered at passion's purity. He stank so badly that we were great chums. I had to leave him, then rats ate his thumbs. As the slaughter continued unabated throughout 1915, the numbers of the butchered, dying and dead became barely believable, and strict censorship meant that with every passing hour, language became more and more a loathsome lie, and printed images of the war became more and more fabled fictions of the imperialist imagination that bore less and less relevance to the reality of mechanized massacre upon massacre. Among them was 25-year-old French writer Léo Latil, who was killed in the Marne in September that year. A good friend of Latil was that one-man musical production line Darius Milhaud, and Milhaud set some of his Provençal friend's words in his third string quartet. Latil died in a notorious nightmare known anemically as the Western Front. Another frontier which experienced similar slaughter was that between Habsburg and Italian forces, with the added agony that many of the trenches here were at alpine altitudes. Weathering out winter up there is beyond the powers of my imagination. Not far from this frontier was the town of Asolo, where great Venetian composer Gian Francesco Malipiero would eventually make his home. In 1916, Malipiero composed his three Boemi Asolani, the first of which bears a title which needs no explanation, La Notte dei Morti, The Night of the Dead. We started today with the chiming of bells, but besides the sanity-destroying sounds of industrialized death which remorselessly rained down on the soldiers, the tolling of bells to mark the incessant dying was to be heard morning, noon, and night. Thank you. The causes of the First World War are multiple and still debated and disputed. But in a more abstract sense, this whole period can be viewed as the painful, protracted birth of the phoenix of the modern world from the reluctant, reactionary flames of the old order, which refused to simply relinquish, roll over, and rest in peace. Die Welt von gestern, the world of yesterday, is the title of Stefan Zweig's wonderful chronicle of the last days of that world. And when in 1916 it was still capable of producing music like this, it is not hard to see why some never wanted it to die. Beautiful, no doubt, but in the context of the trenches and those thousands of beguiled young men being butchered for inches of mud mixed with ever more unidentifiable pieces of human flesh, bone and blood, and God only knows how much unrealized potential, these sounds seemed more and more out of place, somewhere between blinkered indifference and wishful thinking, to tasteless nostalgia and cowardly credulity. And as I said in the previous program, as the 20th century progressed, the old world's ideas of beauty seemed ever more hollow, with an ever darker heart, and its truth became so much lies. That last piece was not Mahler, he had left us 5 years previously, but Franz Schreker, from the final movement of his chamber symphony. Late romantic, indeed, but Schreker had a very unique voice. I have never heard anyone write orchestral music that is so dense, but at the same time so transparent, and I have no idea how he did this. The Chamber Symphony is written for a mere 23 players, yet he manages to make it sound like triple that. Meanwhile, in New England... I like to imagine that piece as a representation of the mighty struggle between the old and the new worlds, but I am pretty sure that was far from the composer's intentions. That was from Ives's Fourth Symphony, and I imagine once again, it was just Ives writing the music he wanted to hear. Who else was going to do it? Hearts with one purpose alone, through summer and winter seem, enchanted to a stone to trouble the living stream. The horse that comes from the road, the rider, the birds that range, from cloud to tumbling cloud, minute by minute they change. A shadow of cloud on the stream changes minute by minute, a horse who slides on the brim, and a horse plashes within it. The long-legged moorhens dive, and hens to moorcocks call. Minute by minute they live, the stones in the midst of all. Too long a sacrifice can make a stone of the heart. Oh, when may it suffice? That is heaven's part. Our part to murmur name upon name, as a mother names her child, when sleep at last has come on limbs that had run wild. What is it but nightfall? No, no, not night, but death. Was it needless death after all? For England may keep faith for all that is done and said. We know their dream, enough to know they dreamed and are dead. And what if excessive love bewildered them till they died? I write it out in a verse, MacDonagh and MacBride, and Connolly and Pierce. Now and in time to be, wherever green is worn, are changed, changed utterly, a terrible beauty is born. September 25th, 1916. That's all for today. You can find details of all the music you've heard this afternoon on this page from this time next Sunday. So until then, thank you for listening and tune in next time for more Resounding Echoes.